last year, we were looking at the example of Jesus, who he was, how he lived, and knowing that we are called to be like him. And then this year, we've been looking more at the book of Acts, which is after the stories of Jesus. And then how did the people who followed Jesus, how did they live that out? How did they go out to be like Jesus? And my hope with all these conversations and with these sermons is I want people to get excited about who Jesus was. And excited about reading the Bible in a new way, I hope. So often, I think when people read the Bible, they look at it sort of like they would read a governmental paper or a decision that comes down from the Senate or the President or the Parliament or whatever your type of governmental system is. And they just read it and go, these are people who have made a decision and it's kind of not related to me in a personal way. Instead, I would like you to see that these writings in the Bible have come out of relationships. It's not just something that's far off, but it's Paul writing to people that he knew, writing to someone like Timothy we spoke about last week, that he knew for about 20 years, and he's not just saying, this is what you have to do, like a government would tell you, this is what you have to do. He's writing like a person who really knew him and had these personal relationships. The biographies of Jesus were written by people, two of them who were Jesus' disciples, and two of them were people who had connection with those that were, that people who really knew Jesus. It's coming out of personal things. And so I hope that we, when we read the Bible, when we look at this, that we see that there's the bigger perspective of what's happening, and yet there's up-close relationships at the same time. Knowing that God is a God who has the bigger perspective in mind, and yet has up-close relationships. So today, we're looking at the relationship that the Apostle Paul had with a guy named John Mark. We've told a little bit of his story about a month and a half ago, but if you like to listen to a radio guy named Paul Harvey, he would always give the rest of the story. And today, I want to give the rest of the story of John Mark's life and that relationship that we're seeing the Apostle Paul say, I want to be like Jesus, and I want people to follow my example like it. So I want to see how he did that with John Mark. So who is John Mark to start with? The whole double name thing is sort of common in the New Testament we see with people. John is his Hebrew name. That would have been the name he was probably given right when he was born. And then Mark or Marcus would have been a Latin name. So when he's among Jewish people, they would most likely call him John. When he's outside of that, they would most likely call him Mark or Marcus. And with the Apostle Paul, we have the same thing where he's known as Saul, and that's his Hebrew name, but Paul is then his more Latinized name. And so it might not be that he changed his name per se, but that he just used whichever name was most fitting in the circumstance. So what do we know about John? Well, he may have had Roman citizenship because he had this dual name. He probably comes from a wealthy family. We're told that his house was big enough that the early church would have prayer meetings there, or at least had a prayer meeting there when Peter was thrown in prison. One of the well-known people of the Bible, the Apostle Peter, he's in jail, and the church meets together to be praying for him, and they meet at the house of John. So and then God miraculously sends an angel, Peter's free from prison, and Peter knows, oh, where will I find people who are praying? That would be at John's house or at his mother's house. So they probably had good connections. This isn't like someone who just shows up at church every now and again. It's a guy who's kind of in the middle of all the action. His cousin was a guy named Barnabas who we're told he was wealthy. He was someone who had land and sold that land. Most likely John's father had died by the time that we hear the story because it's talking about his mother Mary's house, and if it's they're calling it her house, then probably the father is dead because they would have said it's the father's house. And they have at least one servant, so they're most likely a family that has good means. And we're not sure, but in one of the Gospels, in one of the biographies of Jesus, we're told a story of Jesus being arrested and a young man running away, getting his clothes ripped off of him, so he flees naked from the scene. And we're not told the name of who that is, but some people believe that that's John. So there's a decent chance that John at least knew Jesus for part of the time while Jesus was living here on earth. So with all that background, we think maybe he had a good relationship with Peter, because later Peter writes, "Oh, Mark, my son." Could have meant that Peter was the person who actually led Mark to Jesus. Not sure. So I'll give you the background of the story. Some of you have heard this before a month or so ago, but for those of you who haven't, that way you'll catch up with us. There, Paul is going on a trip. He's going with his companion, Barnabas. And Barnabas, who is the cousin, or most likely uncle, of John Mark. So Barnabas says, "Let's take Mark along. We're going to go travel." And Barnabas and Paul, along with Mark, first go to the island of Cyprus. Now, that's where Barnabas is from. So most likely, this is a place that John Mark will feel really comfortable. Like, oh, he probably has family there. And they start going into the synagogues and preaching the gospel there. They end up speaking to a guy who's the governor of the island, or an important person on the island who's not a Jewish person, and he accepts Jesus. So this all starts really nice. We're told that John Mark went along as the assistant. Well, what was the assistant's job? We're not exactly sure, but here are two kind of ideas of what it likely meant. One is the word assistant that they give is sort of like a guy who just is there to write down what's happening. It's kind of like the note taker. He's the one who's, okay, Barnabas, Paul, you guys are doing the work, and I'm going to be the biographer. I'm the one making sure that it all gets written out. The other theory, or could have gone along with it, is he's also this sort of a guy who would be a teacher for the people who then become Christians. So Barnabas and Paul are going out, getting everybody, and then once the people have decided they want to follow Jesus, that, okay, John, now you be training them while we keep going out. So he seems to be someone who's educated, someone who's knowledgeable, can read, can write, and can teach. They've been along the island of Cyprus, and then Paul and Barnabas decide that they're going to go into the area that's now called Turkey, or Asia Minor at the time. And so they travel there, and we're told that there John Mark left them and returned to Jerusalem. You're the guy who's supposed to be doing this job. You're supposed to be writing things down, and then you run away. And this causes a problem because Paul isn't eventually happy with him. But that's as much as we're told of exactly why John leaves. We're just told, and John Mark left them. And later we'll see that that causes problems. Why would he leave? We're not sure, but there are four kind of possibilities. There could be others, but here are some of the conjecture that we've had. One, he's just afraid. You're going into uncharted territory where eventually we see them getting beaten up, getting stoned, getting imprisoned, sorts of issues. I could understand someone saying, I don't know that I want to get myself involved with that. So maybe he left out of fear. Granted, he had seen Peter thrown in prison and God miraculously protect him. So it's not like he didn't know that God could be faithful. He had also seen people be martyred. So he knew God can do miracles, but also sometimes we do face suffering. Maybe he was concerned about his family. His family's back in the area of Jerusalem, and who knows, maybe his mom was sick, so he had to go back and visit her, or he could have just left for family reasons. Although Barnabas is family, and he's running away on Barnabas as well. Which could be then the next part of it. Maybe John Mark got offended. Because before this point, it's always talking about Barnabas and Paul, Barnabas and Saul. Barnabas is kind of the guy who gets the most attention. But starting right at Acts 13, right at that point where it says that he left, it starts talking about Paul and Barnabas. And Paul starts getting more attention. Paul and his companions. And maybe John Mark saw that Paul is now the one who's sort of in charge. It's no longer his cousin. And even if Barnabas is okay with it, maybe John says, that's not right. Barnabas, I'll follow. I don't care for the way that Paul is leading this. Maybe he just got offended. Offended for someone else. Or the other good possibility is this. Maybe he didn't like the fact that they're starting to tell the gospel to people who aren't from his own country, who aren't from his own people group. Because up until that point, it's mostly Jewish people that are becoming Christians. And we're told when they first go to Cyprus that they go into the synagogues, into the Jewish places. But then right after, a guy who's not Jewish decides to follow Jesus, and Paul starts going by his Latin name instead of his Hebrew name. So Paul's obviously trying to connect more with this other people group. Maybe John just thought, I'm not for that. I don't agree with it. And in those times, he's only called John. He's not called John Mark. Maybe that is with a reason. That he, at that point, had just decided, if you're not from my people group, you're not worth it for me. We're not sure which of those four. Maybe it was all of them. But here's a question. If we look at this from a discipleship mentality, should we let people walk away? That's what Paul seems to do. John says, I'm leaving for whatever reason it is, and they let him go. Part of me wants to say, no, you do everything that you can to keep people a part of the family. But sometimes people have made a decision, and there's, at least for a moment, that you allow people to leave. Jesus did that. If you look at the times where, with his disciples, a lot of disciples started walking away, and then Jesus looks at his closest guys, the main 12 disciples, and he says, are you going to walk away too? They're at least given the offer that they can walk. And they all make a really good decision and say, we don't have anywhere better to go. You're the one with the words of life, and they stick around. But sometimes you have to allow people to walk away. Fast forward 2 years later. Paul and Barnabas have already made their first trip, and then they're going to go on a second trip. And Barnabas says, hey, can we take Mark along this time? Paul says, no. He bailed on us the first time. No. And especially if John left for theological reasons, if John had said, I'm not going to stick around because of your work among people who are not Hebrews, then that would make perfect sense why Paul would say no, because that is the thing that he fights against the most in his letters is, if you're going to be that prejudiced against people, you've completely got the gospel wrong and I don't want to work with you. But for whatever reason, he says no. Barnabas just doesn't give up on people though. So he says, fine, I'll go somewhere else. I'll go back to Cyprus and I'm taking Mark with me. So they go. And then Paul ends up taking a different man named Silas. He picks up Timothy along the way and they end up going out separately. So the question is, who was right? Should Paul have taken John Mark back? Or should Barnabas not have taken him? I'm not sure. It seems like the church, at least of what's written, the church sided more with Paul because we're told that the church commended Paul and Silas on their journey. So they're sort of given the blessing to go, and it's silent about Barnabas and Mark. But do we sometimes keep people away from ministry? If we say, you left for whatever reason, and even if you're interested in going right now, I don't think it's the right place for you to do it. That can be one of the hardest parts of discipleship, of helping people become more like Jesus, because if they say, I'm excited to do something, I know I made a mistake before, but I'm really excited to go now, to be able to look at them and say, I don't think this is yet the time for you. That can be really tough. But this is a real fight. I mean, this is a real thing. For those of you who were here last week, you heard several of those examples when Paul is writing and he says, there are people who have left me. There are people who have shipwrecked their faith. There are people who have gone away. There's Hymenaeus and there's Philetus and there's Demas and those that have wandered off. This is a real thing that people can walk off. And in those cases, how do we respond to that? And this seems a little bit like Paul is trying to put discipline on John Mark, saying, look, I know you want this, but this isn't the right time for you. But what is the purpose behind it? I use the word discipline instead of punishment for a reason. Because punishment, the idea is just sort of make you pay for something you've done. Discipline is hopefully to make you learn. So we've seen Paul write about other people that he had even done, we're told that he handed them over to Satan, which we're not exactly sure what that meant. It doesn't sound like a nice thing. But he says, I handed them over to Satan so they might learn not to blaspheme God. See, Paul's not someone who just throws people away and says, I don't care about you. It's even if something difficult has to happen in your life, it's so that you'll grow. It's so that you'll learn. And he tells Timothy, if there are people who disagree with you, gently instruct them in the hope that they will change their mind, in the hope that they will turn back to the truth, that they will come to their senses and escape the devil's trap. So even if we do have to make that kind of a decision of right now we keep people out of ministry, the goal is so that they will learn and grow from it, not to punish. We don't hear about John Mark for a little bit after this. Barnabas, he takes Mark to Cyprus, and maybe Mark just stayed with him there for a while. But it's about one decade later. And then it seems like there's a change in the relationship. And here's where the rest of the story comes in that we didn't talk about a few weeks ago. In Colossians chapter 4 and also in Philemon chapter 1, Paul writes about John Mark and says this. As you instructed before, make Mark welcome if he comes your way. He's writing to the people in Colossae there, or to his friend Philemon. He says, Epaphras, my fellow prisoner in Christ, sends you greetings, but so does Mark and these other men. You are my co-workers. Paul now calls him a co-worker. It's 10 years later, but there's a change. He did not give up on him forever. Don't give up on people. Maybe it'll take 1 week. Maybe it'll take 1 month or a year. Maybe it will take 10 years. But don't give up on people. Paul didn't say, forget him, I will never allow him back. But instead is saying, this guy is a co-worker. And especially when he's writing that Colossians verse that says, make sure that Mark is helped along his way. Maybe other people had heard bad things about John Mark and said, I don't know that we want to help him. And Paul's saying, no. Make sure that you help him. Treat him well. In other people's lives, don't hold grudges against them. Paul sees that there's restoration, allows for restoration, and it continues. We're not told how that situation worked, though. I mean, consider if you're John Mark, right? How do you walk back up to Paul and say, so, I know that I ran away. I know I tried to come back and you sent me away. How about now? It would have been easy. It seems, again, John Mark probably had good connections with Peter, with other people. He would have likely seen all these giants of the church faith. He could have gone to anyone else. Why go back to Paul anyway? Maybe Barnabas said, John Mark, when I die, make sure that you get things right with Paul. We're not sure. But it must have taken humility on John Mark's part, and it must have taken humility on Paul's part to say, okay, I know we've had our bumps, but let's work together. And we're not sure, maybe even Mark had been thrown in jail with him as well. Do you believe in the restoration of people? But then it goes even a step further. The last thing that Paul writes about Mark is something written in 2 Timothy when he's writing to this other young man. And he says, bring Mark with you when you come, for he will be helpful to me in ministry. He is useful in ministry. It's not the same word that was used at the beginning, but if we go back to the start, so Paul and Barnabas are going, and John Mark is supposed to come along to be part of the ministry. He jumps ship. He runs away. And then now the other end of his life is now, this man is useful. It's not he's useless and runs away. It's he's useful. Bring him. I want to have John Mark here. And that can be the beauty of what Jesus does in people's lives, is restoration. Is maybe it's 20 years later from when there was a mistake, but this moment that they say, God can use you. And not just use you, like, you're actually useful to me. It's not, okay, let God use you somewhere else, but instead let's work together because you are helpful. You are a comfort and encouragement. At a different point, Paul refers to Mark as one of the people who comforted him. And we see that later then also in 1 Peter that Peter, this other giant of the faith, talks about Mark and says, Mark has been a help to me, and he's like my son. With each of these, I've tried to also give examples from my own life, and this is the hardest one. Because you don't want to say, oh, this person's like a John Mark in my life that screwed up really bad, and then now I'm being nice and letting them back in. So know that from these examples, I'm not trying to put them in a bad light of it, and especially because I can't put myself as a Paul and be like, I'm apostle, I'm perfect, and it was all their fault. So know that there's grace and humility in this, but just looking at people in my life who I've seen that have a situation has changed, and they've gone off, but then a usefulness. So that's me with a guy named Trevor Gatch. He was a year older than me. We went to high school together. He was one of the Bible study leaders in our school, seen as a really nice guy, who then did something colossally stupid. He brought a gun to our school building. It was a legal gun for him to have, because this is the United States, so people could have guns. But he brought a gun into a school building because a friend asked him, oh, can I borrow your gun for a while? He said, oh, yeah, no problem. So brings the gun to school, has it in his locker. Thankfully, someone else found out about it, told a teacher, and the teacher gets it. And they find out the reason why the friend asked for the gun is because she wanted to commit suicide. He didn't even think to ask, so why do you want to use my gun? Knowing the girl at the time, she definitely didn't look like the hunting type that's going to go out and, oh, I just want to go deer hunting. You would think that he would think, right? So this is a guy that's, everyone likes him, and he's a Bible study leader. He brings a gun to school, which that part wasn't legal, not realizing the harm that he could cause anyone else, especially the person that he's giving it to. So he was kicked out of school at least for one semester. They didn't say you can never come back, but they said there is discipline that needs to happen. He also had to go to, I believe it was a psychologist or some sort of counselor to go through some counseling as well, as did the girl. And you go, wow, well, at 17 years old, you've messed up pretty big time. His parents are then shocked and didn't know this was happening. He gets kicked off the basketball team, which worked out for me because then I got to have his spot starting. I didn't say it was good. I'm just saying it happened. I didn't try to get him in trouble. But that could be the end of Trevor's story. And people could say, wow, I don't know that I ever trust you because you do something that stupid. Instead, the guy has become a youth pastor and just an associate pastor and has continued to work alongside people and has been a great example for many. Even though it took some time for restoration to happen, now he's someone who is being used by God very strongly. The two guys on the bottom, he used to come to this church. He was one of the people that played in the band and did other things, and they were really involved, he and his wife, in our church. And then at one point, because of an issue, we said, okay, well, maybe you should take a step back. And they decided to start helping out then with a different church that was in the area and then moved away. You could go, okay, well, we had a difference of opinion, a difference of decisions. It's not exactly like John Mark saying, I'm just running away, but someone who had left. And then in the time since, they've started to do worship events and had contacted me again and said, oh, we would love to come down to Maastricht and be able to do a worship event in Maastricht to be able to use the Stay Okay. And they've been able to do that, I think, once or twice now, and continue to do that around the country. And God uses them, even if it's not in the same context of what we first hoped for in this church, so to speak. But those are ones that I've seen God work in people's lives. Here has been actually the most fun part for me, the most exciting thing for me this week as I was looking for all of this. This guy, John Mark, that we've been talking about, is just most commonly known as Mark. The reason why he's most commonly known as Mark is because he's the guy who wrote the Gospel of Mark, the second one that we have of the biographies of Jesus in the Bible. So this guy who runs away, who is, the first time he comes back, told, I don't want you, is actually one of the guys who gives us an account of the life of Jesus that is in the Bible. Some of the just characteristics of Mark's gospel. It's the shortest one that we have of the four biographies. It's very fast. It's sort of action, fast-paced sort of a thing where he's writing, Jesus did this, and Jesus did this, and Jesus is doing this miracle, and Jesus is casting out this demon. And he uses words like, immediately Jesus did this, and suddenly Jesus does this. And Jesus is shown as this person who is very strong, but is also a servant who is going nonstop to help other people. He doesn't give quite as many of the parables. He doesn't give sermons of Jesus. But he does have a whole lot of questions. We see Jesus asking questions, people asking Jesus questions. It seems like Mark is trying to get us to think, trying to get us to ask those questions of ourselves. And Mark is very personalized. He writes just with these like eyewitness details, which maybe some of those were ones that he saw. Also, because he had this connection with Peter, and people think that this sort of Peter's account of his life with Jesus. And so we see the emotions of Jesus in the book of Mark. We see Jesus being frustrated. We see Jesus sighing. We see the way that people are reacting to Jesus, the astonishment and indignation. We see compassion of Jesus. We see criticism of Jesus. We see lots of just emotion is put into this. So there's the emotions that affect who we are. There's the questions that are supposed to affect our thoughts. And then there's this Jesus who is working and working. And the title that's given of Jesus is that he was the suffering servant in that one. Because Jesus says at one point, I didn't come to be served, but I came to serve and give myself. And Jesus is over and over in the book of Mark telling the disciples, I came to suffer for others. I came so that others could have life. Jesus is seen as the suffering servant, especially in the Gospel of Mark. Now, here's why I find that incredibly cool. Remember the four reasons I gave for why Mark likely left Paul and Barnabas the first time. Maybe it was because he was afraid of suffering. Maybe it was because he had to run off to family. Maybe it was because he was offended for Barnabas, or maybe because he had prejudice. Well, here's the cool thing. If it was fear, when he writes his gospel about Jesus, he starts going, Jesus is not afraid. Jesus is totally willing to suffer, and Jesus is very clear about it. Mark has looked at who Jesus is, and that's changing who Mark is. Did it have to do with family? Did he run off for that? Mark writes about how Jesus' family members weren't really sure what was going on with Jesus and tried to pull Jesus away from his work, and Jesus is willing to leave his family to do the work that God has called him to do. Jesus had many, many, many reasons for being offended. And yet Jesus says, I'm not here to lord power over you. I'm not here to be served. But he says, I came to serve. And he tells his disciples, in the world, the governors and those who are in charge, they all try to grab for their authority. That's not what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to be one who serves. And so Mark has seen what Jesus is like, and instead of offense, it's about Jesus serving. And then the last cool one. Mark's gospel seems to be written to the people of Rome who are not Jewish. There's just a lot of the words that he uses these Latinisms of words. He gives a lot of details that would make more sense to someone who is Roman. And as Mark gets to the end of the gospel, we see Jesus being crucified. And a Roman centurion standing beneath the cross who looks up and says, "Surely, this was the Son of God." Mark's asked so many questions throughout the book and then leads up to, here's the answer that a Roman man gave. "Surely, this was the Son of God." And Mark, who perhaps before was very prejudiced, is now trying to put the gospel in a way that people will understand outside of his cultural context. He's writing to the people that perhaps he used to hate and is now saying, "You know what I realized when I looked at Jesus and when I looked at the people around Jesus? Is that there are people who don't look like me, people who don't talk like me, people who don't have the same background like me that have been able to look at Jesus and realize, surely this is the Son of God." And that to me is exciting to get to see. That the story that we sometimes miss is we just read the gospel and don't realize it's written by a person. Yes, it's breathed of God, but a person has written it, and the story of how God got them to that place, of how he brought them to someone who could look at Jesus and then tell other people about Jesus. The question to you is, do you believe that Jesus is the Son of God? Have you seen that for yourself? And is that changing your life the same type of way it changed John Mark? Part of this thing about following Jesus is being in relationship together and learning and growing. And I want people to make sure that they make this decision, but then are following through on it. They may not be perfect. Neither was John Mark. But over years and 10 years and 20 years, we see him growing in it. But it does include a decision. Just like that Roman centurion saying, "I see, this is the Son of God." And so today, I hope that you make that decision for yourself. Because you can choose today, just like that Roman centurion, say, "Yes, I see the example of Jesus. I see how it changes people. I see that it's open to everyone." Which means it's open to me. It's open to you. Let's pray.